Welcome to Rock That Relationship, a podcast about all things relationship with Corey and Tracy.
Now let's get real and start creating relationships that rock.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Rock That Relationship. Tracy and I are here today to talk about, can our relationship be saved? Not Tracy's and mine. Ours is already saved. We have a friendship, but that's it. Tracy will remind you all that we have just a friendship. But our topic today is, can our relationship be saved? And this is all part of season 6, where we're talking about relationships. You're in a relationship. Maybe you hit a stumbling block or an obstacle and you're wondering, should I stay or should I go? Well, we are so thrilled to have on Claire Afua-Jorgensen today, who is a marriage and relationship coach. And we're going to get the opportunity to ask her all of these questions about, can our relationship be saved? So Claire, thank you so much for being on the show today. And we're thrilled to have you. So can you tell us, excellent. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and what drew you to this type of work? Why do you have a passion for helping people save their relationships?
Yes, thank you so much for the question, and thanks a lot for having me today. So actually, I think most of my life I have been drawn to the dynamics of, you know, relationships between people, myself included. And I have enjoyed, you know, speaking to people. And in general, actually finding solutions to, you know, whatever, especially finding solutions to things that seem impossible. So I have always been talking and, you know, investing in learning about people, and how our mind works and how to build more intelligence emotionally and stuff like that. But actually the biggest trigger was my own marriage. And during the years of my marriage, of course, there were some amazing times in the beginning, but we had some challenging times along the way. And we hit a point of, you know, impossible to resolve. Let me put it that way. And I think that point, you know, I became very interested in finding out, can you save this? Is it possible to save it? And if so, what is the underlying factors that helps us to save relationships? So my own journey ended up in a divorce and actually being able to revive that dead marriage back to, you know, back to life. So that's what brought my biggest interest in this work I'm doing.
So you got divorced and then got back with the partner that you divorced and you guys fixed that and you, that's correct. Is that what happened?
Yes.
Wow. How much time was in between that when the divorce and then the?
So I think the gap was about 3 years. But that's when we got back to Marion, but we started, or I started coming back to my senses. About a year after the divorce itself.
And do you have children together?
Yes.
Did you have these children?
Yes, we did. So I was pregnant with our last one when we were in the midst of the divorce.
Wow. We have a lot to uncover, Claire. I'm definitely intrigued as to what happened during that year to get you to rekindle. But, I'll turn it over to Tracy because she has a question.
Well, I know now I want to delve more into this. Sorry. And just tell us if we're being too nosy, but, because this is just a podcast, people can't see. So you're African. So you're from Ghana.
Yes.
And you're married to a Danish gentleman.
A Danish guy. Yes.
Okay. And you guys were living in Denmark when all this was happening or?
Yes, we lived in Ghana before and then we moved to Denmark. So yeah, in the heat of the drama, we were based in Denmark.
Wow. So you have cultural issues going on, like geographical issues going on. You're like, I'm pregnant and I'm out of here and you guys are just not getting along. And then like a year later, you're like, oh, wait a minute. Let me just see if we can fix this. And that led you down this whole path, right?
Yes. And actually, you're putting it quite right, because one of the biggest issues we had was every time things got off, I was like, you know what? I just want to go back to the place where the sun is shining every time.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So that was a statement I said quite a lot. But shockingly, when we got divorced, I actually didn't move out of Denmark. I was shocked that I actually enjoyed living there.
But isn't that always the case? Like, mm-hmm. you're like, get me out of here. I want to get out of here. And then you're presented with that opportunity and you're like, well, maybe it's not so bad here. Right?
Exactly.
This is so interesting. Like, okay, so do you think there are telltale signs that a relationship can be saved or not saved? I mean,
yes,
you had all those extra factors, right? Of being pregnant. I mean, is there ever a time where maybe abuse or something horrible, like where it can't be saved?
Yes. Or so I actually, this delicate question of, synopsis of, a marriage's fate. In my opinion, it's a fairly simple question. What indicates whether marriage can be saved or not, at least what I have experienced with the many couples or families I've worked with, is whether we are actually interested in putting in the work. And for some, the work is quite a lot. So that's where then the question comes, is it worth it? Am I willing to really put in this amount of work? So what happens normally is one of two things. Either people are not interested in putting in the work, and yet they are also not bold enough to say, you know what, I'm not going to do this, I'm done. And so they stay in this, stuck place of limbo and being miserable. I actually think that is worse than walking out. Or you decide that I am just not interested in putting in that work, so I'm going to walk out of it. Or in my case, and in what I hope for most relationships, you decide that, this is a long shot, but I'm going to give it my best. And what happens normally is that when you do put in the right effort, most relationships can be saved. But I need to warn that sometimes the effort is quite a lot.
Well, I mean, when you're talking, I think about what that work like kind of looks like. I know that for me, when I've been in relationships that have been really struggling, that one, I was more willing to put in the work, but one, like it seemed like it was a good investment if I was still in love with the person. I know that I've also been in relationships where I have fallen out of love, but I still wanted the relationship to work. And I, as much as I tried, I couldn't find that love again. How does that fit into it? Like the still the attraction and the love you have for each other.
Exactly. So for the questions that you're asking, I'll deal with the first part of it, the love issue. So, we have different levels of love, and you have the erotic love, the eros, which is the feelings, the butterflies and stuff like that. And honestly, that kind of love is not able to sustain a relationship forever. It's critical. Mm-hmm. It's important. It has to be there to some extent. So when you say you have fallen out of love, my question becomes, which of the loves is it? Because the other kind of love, which is what will save a relationship, is the agape, is the one where, I love you so much that, I care about you. I see you as you are. It's not about butterflies. It's not about, and I think you're talking about that kind of love. And that kind of love, if it has actually left, it can be restored, but that's why I say it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work because not on the other person, but on me. I have to basically rewire, some things in me. I basically have to change some of my belief system, because if I see things in the person that I absolutely don't like, I am going to continue not liking it. And if it does trigger negative feelings and emotions inside me, it is going to continue to trigger these negative feelings and emotions inside me. So the question then becomes, do I want to rewire this? And that requires me changing my behavior, changing my belief system, the way I think about things, the way I see things in general. So it's a lot of work in that sense. But if this, if this kind of agape love is still there, and what is missing is the other thing, which is, the erotic love, that is something that can actually easily be brought back from my experience. Again, there may be some work that needs to be done there, but it's easier to bring that back. But the other thing requires a little bit more effort. And normally for people that get to a place where they're like, I'm just so done, I'm so tired of this, It is because it is the deep love that, you know, has eluded. And it has eluded because of evidence of, you know, betrayal or trust or behaving in a different way, which has actually affected it. So it depends on what it is. But the honest truth is also human beings change. We change. We are people. We change. And I may have changed. The other person may have changed along the way. So recognizing what has really happened here and then understanding what is needed if we want to move it to the place we want it to be. And then questioning myself, do I want to do this work? You know, and what happens with most people is, yeah, I want to do the work, but really they don't want to do the work. Which means that you can go for therapy. And every time you go to the therapist, you hope that they listen to you, you know, just complaining about what the other person is doing and have a pity party. Then you actually don't want to do the work. Which means that maybe you should consider, you know, biting the bullet and saying, this is, you know, this is not for me. I'm better off walking away.
Do you think that the erotic kind of love, you say that that can't sustain a relationship, right? Do you think that naturally falls off in a lot of relationships just with like time or the stresses of life, the jobs, the kids, all that kind of stuff? Or do you see it where that sustains? Like, or I know it can't sustain the relationship, but do you see where it doesn't disappear for some people?
So what I have experienced is that it always subsides, the erotic kind of love. If it has not subsided, then it means that people have put in quite a lot of effort. Now the challenge is, what are you even putting in the effort into? Because the erotic love is based on looks and feelings and how you talk and how you make me feel. And I mean, I look different than what I looked like 20 years ago. So unless I'm going to be, you know, cutting myself, which there's nothing wrong with if that's what I want to do. Unless that's what I'm going to continue putting effort into, it is very likely that the way my partner used to see me is going to change along the way. Now, the truth is he's also going to change, or she's also going to change in the way they see things. So that's the reason why the erotic love is not a foundation for sustaining a relationship. But what I have experienced is that because we live together, actually we start appreciating each other, or the erotic love starts being built based on different things. So for example, sometimes you meet somebody and you like the way they look. That's what attracted you. But as you go deeper in the relationship, you start liking their mind more. You like the way they sound. You like the way they think, you know, and the way they trigger you intellectually in a different way. So now you get feelings for them based on that. That's the reason why even the erotic life changes. So it is actually quite complex and quite difficult to build a relationship on. But the other kind of love can be more stable. Again, it has its own challenges, because when you have, for example, you have something like infidelity, irrespective of how much I care about you and, you know, I have empathy towards you and I want to love you, you are just going to shake that foundation. So then I have to rebuild it. Then the question becomes, do I want to rebuild it or not?
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about the infidelity piece, that was sort of going to be my next question is, have you seen couples come back from that? I mean, have they been able to put the work in? And what does it look like when they're putting the work in? I mean, so, I'm curious to see, you know, some people stay even if there's been infidelity, but I'm not sure that they put the work in. They're still resentful and there's still trust issues. What does it look like when people really come back from that?
Yeah. And I like that what you said in your last statement, because I think the worst that you can do in a relationship is to stay in it, be bitter, be resentful, be unhappy and be miserable. In fact, I hope everybody restores their relationship. But if you're going to be bitter and resentful, perhaps walk away. And when it comes to infidelity, my experience actually in most situations, there are exceptions, is that the infidelity itself is not the issue. It is a symptom of something else. Now, the problem with infidelity is it really cuts through. It's like you've broken a covenant, you've broken trust, you've betrayed. It's really bad, you know, on every level. So the challenge is moving from the infidelity itself to understanding what happened. What was it that was going on underneath? And for some people, they never move past it. Why could you do that? How could you ever do that? You know, I can never trust you again. And whether they stay or they leave, that's the place where they end. And I mean, you cannot blame them. It's a big hit for most people. But I have worked with people where they decide, you know, they decide that I hate this. It's difficult. It's challenging, but I want to get to the point where I can forgive them honestly. And I can also heal. And forgiveness is not about me. It's not about the other person. It's actually about me. I just don't want to feel like this about this situation anymore. So that's when I work on myself and my ability to forgive the other person. And if I am also met with somebody that understands that this is a non-negotiable standard, you shouldn't do this again. You cannot. It's not going to be part of our future. This is a clear boundary that, you know, we don't cross this line. We talk about it. We talk about our edges. We talk about what went wrong. We talk rather than go and cheat. And they also decide to forgive themselves and not feel guilty or shameful and work on it. And the two of us meet there. I have actually a client that one time opened their mouth and said that the affair has been the biggest gift in our marriage. So you can actually get to that place because it forced them to work on some things. So, you know, sometimes we can pack away the real issues and then go through every day and it looks on the surface like everything is fine. But there were issues that they were not addressing. But because of the affair, they had to address those issues. And addressing it meant that she started, you know, putting her foot down, you know, and saying no to things that she had to say. Mm-hmm. So there were no clear boundaries in the past, but now there were clearer boundaries. And at the same time, now, you know, the other part, the partner also realized that you cannot just do whatever you feel like doing in a relationship. You know, even though I feel like doing it and I can and I have the opportunity, it doesn't mean I should do it. I have to think about myself and the other people that I have made, you know, a covenant or, you know, have agreed to do life with or be with in that sense. So I have seen it. I mean, I have even seen situations where a child has come out of it, out of the infidelity, and they are still able to walk through. Yeah, they are still able to, you know, put it behind them, welcome the beautiful child as part of the family, and move on with it.
Wow. That is phenomenal. And do you think that that's best done with a therapist? I mean, can people do this on their own, or they need to, if something huge like that happens, they've got to get in with a therapist?
I would highly recommend, not because I'm one, that because some of the conversations are very challenging. Mm-hmm. And what I have noticed, especially in infidelity, is the partner, you know, who had the affair normally is not in a position to share everything because they are afraid. So it's a very bad cycle. So they are caught, they share something, not that they want to lie, but they are afraid to share everything. So then the other person keeps finding out more information about what happened, and it does not help. It doesn't help at all. It doesn't help the whole journey of figuring out whether we are even going to resolve it or not. So what normally a therapist can help with is to facilitate the honest conversation about what really happened. And there are times where I would tell the partner that is hurting that I don't think you are ready to hear everything that has happened, but you are going to hear it because I give you my word. So I will hear everything. And that's when there is a child, you know, and they haven't heard that yet. And I'm going to let the partner tell everything that has happened. We work through it, and then they know that it's non-negotiable. You have to tell your partner everything about what has happened. The consequences, they may walk away, but you have to tell them. So then you can facilitate an honest conversation about this is the depth of the damage. Do you want to work through it, or is it too much? And even if you don't want to work through it to stay, you still have to work through it because it's traumatic actually sometimes. Not sometimes, it's traumatic for everybody, depending on the extent of, you know, what happened. And so even walking away to the next relationship, it's important to leave that baggage behind, heal, and then say that's it, that's my past, I move on from it, and not move into relationships being very suspicious, very jealous, like, you know, a hawk. When your partner moves to the left, you're like, what are you doing? Where are you going? Healing with a therapist is definitely recommended. And, you know, it also quickens the whole process.
And when you say, like, they have to know everything, are we talking like details or like,
no, it depends.
Is it right? Like,
it depends on who it is. Some people want details, you know, some people want excessive details. I always say, I don't think you need it. And when they start getting the details, they're like, you know what? I'm good. I don't need all that details. Mm-hmm. But I mean with being honest is if you cheated with three people, you mention it. You don't say, oh, it was just a one-time thing and it was one person. I mean, for me, it's like, don't come and waste it all, any of us, our time here.
Right.
Let's see what has really happened. Let's not find out next year that there was another, you know, guy or girl or whoever in the corner. Just say exactly what the damage is and let's deal with it. Also, the timing, because sometimes people lie about it. Oh, it was 2 years ago. Meanwhile, it was still going on just last week or last month. So those kind of details, I think they are very painful, but it's important to start saying the truth and, you know, lay your cards down and then we can work through it.
And so would you have a private session then with each partner? So, cause you're going to get all the dirty details in one session, right? And then you're going to be kind of the filter through which the other person's going to find that stuff out versus something shocking. Like all at once or something.
Exactly. And that's the reason why I recommend a therapist. So when something like infidelity has happened, I do not recommend sitting with the two of them. Nothing good comes out of it. They may even kill each other in front of you. Mm-hmm. So it's not a constructive session.
Right.
So typically, you know, it's highly recommended to take each person separately. And because also the work to be done on each person is very different. For the person that cheated, I mean, believe it or not, they are also going through a lot. They are feeling guilty. They are afraid. They feel a lot of shame. And nothing good comes, you know, to anyone when they feel shameful, guilty, fear. They cannot do the right thing. They cannot think straight. They cannot, so they also need help to navigate, but also to give them a safe space to actually explore what happened here and what are we dealing with here. And most people in that situation honestly appreciate it because all we all do is probably just say you're a very terrible person, but they are not that terrible. They didn't do the right thing, you know, shoot the action, but not the person. So it's also helping the person to also somehow heal through it because they're waiting for either get out of my life or I'm going to work through this with you. And you are going to really have to prove yourself. Either way, it's a tough journey for them. So that's the kind of conversation that you'll be having with a person that's cheated. And then the person that, you know, is like the victim, they are hurt. They need to be heard. They need to be seen. But at the same time, unfortunately, I'm a tough coach. They need to snap out of it very quickly because it can become, you know, a deep, deep, you know, hole that you dig for yourself. Right. You know, whether you forgive in a week or you forgive in a year, the process is exactly the same. It's more whether you want to. Because it doesn't change what happened. So that's the journey for them. And typically, my clients who are the victims, they think I'm very hard on them until we have the couple's sessions. And they realize that, oh, wow, I'm very hard. I'm worse on the other person. Because with the person that cheated, I have to lay this foundation. We have to have this honest conversation. If you're not going to change, I mean, I will not take your case. I will help your partner to heal.
Right.
But I'm not the right coach for you because don't deceive all of us here. And for some people, sometimes the issue is, I'm not sure I know how to change. Great. Then we work on how do you change through that journey. But if it's like, no, I think I have the right to sleep with anybody I want to anyhow, then let's have that frank conversation. So we also tell your partner that this is not going to change, which means I'll highly not recommend reconciliation for a situation like that. So it will be separate sessions. Sometimes I feel that a certain number of weeks before we then sit together and have the two of you addressing it.
This is interesting. This is a personal thing that happened to me. So one of my partners did have an affair and we'd been together for 7 or 8 years and I decided to let it go or like work through it. And so when we were in couples therapy, we were together in the room and the therapist was saying to my partner, like, you need to decide if you even want to be here. Cause she would just sit and like stare at the wall. Like she was like, her arms were crossed over her chest and she wasn't participating. And I mean, it was through my law school. So it was my therapist. And so she never had the opportunity to have a separate, you know, session except later on down the road with her own therapist. And I thought that was really helpful. That person and I are actually really good friends now. The ex of mine, not the, me and the therapist, but, that was, I always bring that up. Like the therapist said, like, you got to decide if you want to be in this. Like we're sitting in this room and you're not participating. You're literally staring at the wall. Like it's not like, that's the first question. Do you want to fix this or don't you? And then, you know, a lot of interesting things happened after that where she kind of kept carrying on and we tried to stay in the relationship, but, I think it wasn't like the damage was done, but it kind of opened the door for me to look at other people. And then it was an interesting situation because we're like best friends now and she's with the person, she's married to the person she cheated with. But I'm wondering, like after the fact, we kind of all three of us went out one night after they were together and had a little, we've been drinking. So I was like, you need to apologize to me. And so it's kind of like our own drunken bar reconciliation, you know, with no chance for violence. But I was like, look, I can't talk to you until you apologize. And she was like, for what? And I'm like, for sleeping with my girlfriend. And then after that, like I got the apology I wanted. It like dissipated everything, you know? And so I think even if you decide, hey, we're done, do you think like, there is like reconciliatory therapy, like, especially with kids involved, right? Like where you're going to have a, continue to have a relationship.
Exactly. And that's also exactly the reason why, I highly recommend to start separately because your partner, sometimes that attitude of not being interested is not necessarily what is going on deep down. It's a lot of shame and it's like, you know, they just don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. About the situation, right? And sitting in front of somebody that you have, you know, betrayed and a therapist who is probably going to tell you off, you don't feel supported. You feel like, you know, the bad person in the room. So, and most of them, when you speak to them one-on-one behind the scene, they are very broken as well. They are very deeply, honestly broken. Mm-hmm. And once you work through that brokenness, they get to a place where they are able to understand what they have done to the other person. So that they can offer the real apology of, I am so sorry. Not just because I have to say sorry, but because I can see the pain that I've caused you. And I can see the damage that, you know, this is going to create for both of us. Whether we reconcile to be together or not, let's reconcile and, you know, let's help each other to get to that place where you accept my apology. And, you know, we are back on good terms. So it's exactly what you're saying that, you know, that honest reconciliation. But it always starts with each person. And that's the reason why you should start with the individual and find out what's going on with you and why did you do that? So those are some of the questions that I asked them. And most of them would have thought through it deeply. What happened and why did they do it? And they may have gotten into the answer to some extent, but exploring with them for them to even understand what happened there, you know, helps in the reconciliation process. It will never, giving that reason to the other person, will never resolve their pain, but it helps along the way.
And do you find that there are cultural differences? Like I was just in Asia with a lot of Europeans and British people in particular, and they were like, we don't do therapy. We don't do any of that. And they would just go out, you know, for their drinking at night. But then we got into these talking circles and, you know, I'm obsessed with therapy. So we talked a lot about that. And it was interesting how much more open they became just in that week. And I wonder if, like, as a therapist, you're reading that person, right? Like, you really have to figure out, okay, what is the wall? What is the wall there? Is it cultural? Is it, like, pride?
Yes.
Does that come from family, et cetera?
There are a lot of differences in people. You know, I did read the one of you, and now I don't remember. I think maybe it's Corey. That has, you know, the Myers-Briggs, you know, certification. So for some people, it's not even culture. It's also temperament. Mm-hmm. So when you're doing, you know, therapy, you have to read the people. you have to read the person properly. And you are right. The Europeans have a whole other culture of once we drink, everything becomes much, much clearer. Mm-hmm. And I'm generalizing quite a lot.
Right.
But if you go speak to somebody when they are just, you know, quite sober, you know, less of therapy, you may struggle sometimes depending on who they are. So having a drink with them, you know, loosening up a bit, you may get to the bottom of the issue. But at the same time, even if the person has been drinking or they open up a bit more, depending on their personality, you may have to read more what they don't say as well. So sometimes when I speak to people, I say, I heard what you said. I also heard what you didn't say. Mm-hmm. You have to hear both of them. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot. And for my husband and I, that was also one of our biggest challenges, cultural issues, you know, because Danes just don't want to confront things. It's like, can't we all just laugh and be happy? Was all this, you know, whereas I come from a culture where let's deal with it. Let's confront mm-hmm. it here and now.
Right,
so
right.
It was like everything that we were going through, he was like, can't we just sweep it under the carpet and go get drunk and pretend it never happened? You know, why must we talk about it? And I felt, you know, neglected, you know, mm-hmm. unheard, unseen. I felt like I was about to explode with all the things that were going on inside me, that there was no avenue to share. And I didn't really like drinking that much. So, you know, it didn't help. Eventually, I started drinking a lot because I worked for a beer company, Carlsberg. And so every time they asked us to come and taste, that did have a bad effect on me, that I started enjoying not just alcohol, but actually beer a lot. And so eventually, we each had to meet halfway through to some extent. So we had to meet. So I don't have the same need to talk about everything. Even though I'm a therapist, I can have things going on in my marriage where it's like, you know what, we agree to disagree, let's just move on with it. And my husband also had to move to meet me to a point where he realized we are going to have to talk about things in life. So it's also personality. So sometimes mm-hmm. when somebody comes and they are like that, you know, it may not necessarily be that they are not interested, but you may have to break the surface. You may have to get beneath something that is going on there. And even those that are interested in talking, sometimes depending on who they are, they don't share a lot. They don't share everything mm-hmm. with you. So you have to work hard at the trust. And there are also those that come in the first session, everything you need to know, you get to know it. So they help you quite a lot along the way. So there's a lot of dynamics.
Well, that, like, I'm
that would be me.
Yeah. We're, and Corey and I are both external processors, so we want to talk about everything, right?
Yes, and all the time.
I find that to be very helpful to the rest of the world. If, like, if
everybody have to listen to you, that's why, because you're the one talking. But wait, so Claire, I do have a question though, because this is bringing up some interesting thoughts for me around like the timing of things. Like, it makes sense to me that someone who might have been in a relationship for 10 years or have kids or have like kind of a bigger investment may be more likely or want to save the relationship. I mean, maybe not, but I think about couples who come together and it's pretty early on and they're just not getting along, or there's something that's just a major disconnect for them, and they're in their first few months or maybe first year. Mm. You know, I know it's up to the person as to whether they want to save that relationship, but I'm thinking, how does kind of longevity play into all of this? Or do you find that there are people that might have just gone out on like 4 dates and aren't getting along and are like, we're going to make this work. And they say, you know, they're going to just kind of do that. And, you know, so I mean, particularly I'm asking because, you know, as I'm realizing my mortality, I turned 50 this year and, you know, kind of thinking about this idea that.
Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. You made it to 50.
Is it, you know, you kind of are at a point where you're like, especially, you know, being that I'm with women, it's like this, it's kind of slim pickings. You kind of want to find somebody, you know, and once you do, you're like, well, this person's like pretty good. And then you want to make it work. And then you're like 4 months in, you're like, I'm not sure, but you're like, oh, the alternative is worse. Like, so I'm just curious to see, you know, it's kind of a lot there, but just this idea of longevity, like is it worth all that work at the beginning?
So actually the answer is yes and no. you don't like that, right?
Right.
So,
yeah.
So what I'll say is that it depends on, for me, if I am a person that, for example, I know I have trust issues and then I start dating somebody and within 2 months, the person has already cheated. You know, it is, a question of, do I want to work on my trust issues? It's not even about them. Do I want to work on my trust mm-hmm. issues? Because this is a, you know, a life, you know, saving opportunity for me to see if, you know, I can work through it. So the end result is not necessarily about should I save the relationship. It's about what can I learn about myself. And when it's that early in the relationship, you are not so deeply invested yet. So it's a good, you know, it's actually a good opportunity to try it out. So it's about me, right? But at the same time, if I realize that this person is just going to trigger me into being weird and needy and, you know, maybe 2 months, it's not worth it. I should walk out and move on and find somebody else to work on my trust issues with. So it's more a conversation about, and it's about, it's not even just about a relationship that is, you know, short. Even for a long-term relationship, whatever issue comes up, you remember I said that my husband and I, sometimes there are some issues we decide it's not worth it. You know, is it worth it to discuss? Is it worth it to work on it? Is it worth it? Or are we just, are we okay to just accept this, the status quo and move on, you know, from this particular issue? But at the same time, so that's the yes and the no. So at the same time, when you are with somebody and you start seeing signals like this, it is a fantastic opportunity for the two of us to figure out how we are together in challenging situations. So, I mean, I'm more inclined towards the work it out, you know, even though it's quite early, if you can, because when we have been together for 10 years, we will have issues. And there we have baggages, we have something else that adds up. So working through issues become a whole other drama. But 2 months, there are still butterflies. There are still some things that help us along the way. So perhaps let's explore if we can, you know, we can navigate this. And then you will learn a lot about yourself. You will learn a lot about them as well. Like, oh, and along the way, the answer will be very clear. When it's somebody that you definitely don't want to navigate life's challenges with, the issue that came up, when you're trying to navigate it with them, you realize, okay, this is where we part. But at the same time, what I've experienced with people is you find out that, wow, I thought I knew her. But I mean, even though she just pissed me off, the way we worked through it, the way she apologized, the way she worked on herself so that she stops, she stopped what she did to hurt me. That for me is, you know, the biggest gift of who this person is. And I want to explore life with this person. So I'll say this is a great opportunity to, you know, no harm done to, you know, to be selfish and work through your own issues, but also work through issues together if you can.
So that, what you just said brings up a thing about repair. So everyone's going to make mistakes, right? Everyone's going to hurt somebody else's feelings. We can't all be perfect all the time. We don't say things. We're hangry. We're like cranky. We're stressed and we say stuff that's rude or we act in a way that's rude. So how important is like repair just in your daily and even at the beginning of a relationship? Cause what you just said, like you see, oh, I want to be with this person because I see how they fix stuff, right? Or how they. Can you go more into
how they navigate? Yes. How they navigate life together. And these are some of the, you know, few basic things that when my marriage was in trouble, when, you know, I was navigating relationships in general, I wish that I knew, you know, because today, some of the things that I admire the most about my partner is not, you know, how he buys me flowers or stuff. It's about even when we fight and things are really not good between the two of us, you know, how he finds the will to try and, you know, reconcile, you know, in the midst of, you know, I'm a woman, I have hormones all over the place sometimes, how he finds the will, you know, and at the same time, one of the things that, you know, actually build my self-esteem is when I watch myself, you know, push through things, you know, it's called self-esteem. So it comes up, you know, the more I work through tough situations, the more I build it up for myself. So in a relationship daily, I mean, and I'm not even exaggerating when I say daily, you know, because sometimes I'm sitting there and I'm about to get a thought and whatever thoughts I'm about to get and whatever words will come out of my mouth based on that thought, I stop myself and say, this is not going to be good for me, for him, for anybody in the midst of this. So girl, stop yourself. And then I stop myself. So that is my repair. And it doesn't even hit the other person yet. I repair myself. There are times where it will hit the other person, you know, my uniqueness, and I call it my someway-ness. And hopefully they have enough sage power in them to actually repair. So it is a give and take. And it becomes a great relationship when I have the ability to repair sometimes and the other person also has the ability to repair sometimes, because I'm going to be weird and they are going to be weird. And so it's not a measure of, you know, who is weird and what are we doing. It's a measure of how much we repair, you know, either together or individually. And my experience is, if just one person decides, you know, today is the day that I'm going to be, you know, this, you know, the stage for all of us. Fantastic. And then the other person can just misbehave. But when we have the worst days is when both of us, our issues clash and none of us are attempting to be, you know, sensible, have emotional intelligence or anything. And those days happen. And then we just chuck it to, okay, that was a terrible day. You know, let's see what tomorrow brings. And then we move on. So I like what you said, that repairing and fixing is a daily part of a relationship. And if I go into a relationship thinking that every day is going to be just beautiful and I'm going to be perfect, I mean, you disappoint yourself within 1 week. You are going to be weird yourself.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I'm, you know, like when you're talking about too, like when things come up, like what stuff is my stuff and what stuff is our stuff and what stuff is your stuff? And am I being kind of triggered with my own stuff? And do I need to put that on you unnecessarily, you know, and fix that?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's making me think about that.
Is it unrealistic? There's something that some people say, I think Corey says it, like, it's too soon to have these kind of problems. Well, she said that to me a lot, right? And then I'm like,
I say that to you all the time. I'm like, why are you fighting on a first date? Like, what are you doing?
Not anymore. Now I'm in something
I'm like, that's
way
called
different,
a bad date. But anyways, no, we have very different views on what the first date should be.
Well, okay. So the last couple of relationships I had were, the last few were tumultuous, right? And part of those were my issues. Part of them were the other person's issues. And I don't have that belief that, oh, everything's got to be perfect, right? And so I just don't think that way. And like, does every day have to be perfect? And does that person have to be perfect? I mean, I'm not talking about abuse or anything terrible like that, but like, we, especially as people who are older, but I don't even think it matters if you're older, you come with baggage, right? I mean, people grow up in abusive households. They have all kinds of issues or were cheated on in the past and stuff. And I feel like you're taking the whole person, and that person is pretty complex, you know?
Exactly. So does every day have to be perfect? You know, I would say even the bad days I consider as perfect days, because I learn from the bad days as well, whatever we call bad. But when we use the word perfect, you know, the word itself, we put excessive pressure on ourselves. What does it even mean to be perfect, right? It's very subjective, depending on who is looking at it. But I use my own relationship as example, just to also protect my clients much more. And my husband, he has this, you know, he used to have this view of, when we discuss, it means that, you know, something is really bad. And typically when people come from that background, it may be because of how they saw adults discuss in their lives. Maybe it wasn't healthy. I grew up in a home where, you know, my parents were not really fighting a lot. But I knew it when my parents were not agreeing on a topic. I knew it. I mean, they were not, my father was not loud or no, my mother was, but I don't know how to explain. They had healthy, you know, disagreements where we as children experienced it. And we talk about everything, you know, along the way. For example, I think, you know, when I put on too much weight, if we go home as a family and we are eating, everybody will mention it. Like, my goodness, are you going to do something about that? Not in a negative way, but in a way of, you know, we love you and we are caring, you know, we are wondering what's going on there. Can we help? You know, we are a bit more open about stuff like that. So I remember that for my husband, it was, and they are good and, you know, bad sides of it. I'll come a bit to, you know, what was good about the way he was as well. So every time he and I were discussing, and I had a weird tendency of bringing discussions in the middle of the night when the guy was also tired and wanted to sleep. So it's now 12 midnight, and this is where I really need us to talk about the way you spoke to me, like around 6 a.m. You know, he really didn't get it, to be honest. And that in itself created a lot of tension, you know, for us. And because for me, it was like, this is normal. I mean, why would we talk about it? Why can't we disagree and still, you know, solve the issue? or not solve the issue. For him, it was like, oh my God, we're about to discuss it. This is really bad. This is really, really bad. So we had to figure this out between the two of us, that what is perfect for us or what is okay for us. And that that definition is something that it's only the two people that can figure it out. You know, there is no standard for it. But at the same time, my husband had a thing that he saw his parents did that was good, which is they always sleep on the same bed. They always, and for me, I grew up with parents where it was okay to sleep here, to sleep there, to sleep together in the bed. So especially when we are fighting, I'll be like, you know, I'm not even coming to the bedroom, take the room, I'll sleep in the sofa. And he was like, oh my God, we are divorced already, you know? It just triggered him in a very strange way. And I'm like, why are you so obsessed with lying beside me? You didn't even want to talk to me. Why do you want to lie beside me, by the way? So we had to, but at the same time, now I have learned to appreciate that. Because if I can bring myself to actually go and lie beside him, it means that even if we are fighting and things are not good, you know, it's not that bad. You know, there are some silent codes. And if I don't show up in the bedroom, then you know that I really hate you right now, you know. So whatever you're doing, maybe pray, maybe buy me something. You know, I'm just kidding. Do something differently because I may just stay here in the sofa. So what is perfect? But I think if we appreciate sometimes also our backgrounds and our, you know, our beautiful, unique and weird selves, you know. So if I show up on the first date and I am comfortable having an argument, it does not necessarily mean I'm a very argumentative person and you are going to be fighting with me every day that you stay with me. It just means that I am just comfortable having arguments, you know, and maybe it's an indication that I know, you know, I'm used to having healthy arguments. And so then the person that is being triggered, my question to you would be like, what's the problem? What's going on? What is the emotion going on with you? Why are you triggered that they are actually comfortable enough to discuss or disagree with you even on a first date? And let's explore it and then figure out. And when we have these conversations, this is when we build intimacy and, you know, we build a foundation for the relationship to actually last. So I always say that every opportunity to, you know, to have an issue is not like we deliberately go and create problems and say, yay, now we're about to learn from it. No, that's not what I'm saying. Right. What I'm saying is in the normal day-to-day things, the things that trigger us, the things that make us uncomfortable, instead of withdrawing or putting labels on each other or judging each other, why are you like that? Why are you not like that? It is actually an opportunity to create intimacy, an opportunity to be vulnerable with each other. Because for the person that is also arguing on the first day, they may never have actually considered it. So it's an opportunity for you to get to know them, like, why? What's going on? You know, for them to realize, oh, wow, maybe I just have a need, or maybe I'm just used to doing it and maybe I can stop it, you know, and then we bond with each other and then we can relearn or, you know, something else together.
Well, and what I think one person tolerates is different than another person will tolerate, right? Like what Corey and I have as far as like wanting in a relationship is so different, right? Like I can tolerate a lot more roller coaster up, down. That does not scare me, freak me out, whatever. It's when I've been unhappy, right, that then I'm like, okay, I need to get out of this or whatever. But she looks at some of the stuff I've been through and just from the beginning is like, oh my God, just I don't even want to like see this or hear about it. And I'm like, no, what?
It's like
what?
Just, when you're slowing down watching that car that's on fire on the side of the road just because you want to rubberneck over. That's what some of this experience has been like.
Well, but that's the thing is like that, I think that's another cultural thing, right? Or a temperament thing or whatever, where I'm way more comfortable, with a lot of emotion, a lot of drama, a lot of that to me doesn't freak me out. And I do look at repair as a very important thing because, you know, I've been a hot mess in my past and I've been, you know, my attachment style was avoidant, dismissive, and now it's not, it's secure. And I've gone through all of this stuff, but it wouldn't have happened had I not been in these relationships. And so we had a podcast all about, you know, red flags versus baggage, and there's just baggage. Yeah. I mean, people are going to have baggage. So I think you, in order to work this stuff out, I think you start all these really deep conversations from the get-go before the big, huge problems start.
So when you talk about you and Corey, you know, I was smiling because my husband and I, we used to be, I think now we are more And like, we used to be very opposite. And even still today, people call me the unstoppable and call him the unmovable. You know, you cannot get him to move and you cannot get me to stop. And this is the two of us trying to do life together. So you can see the contrast. With different cultures, everything, when you put Denmark and Ghana on different scales, we are actually on the opposite side of everything that you can measure. So that also adds its own dynamics into it. But what I realize is, you know, when I stop to try to understand myself and the other person, you know, you get shocked what you can tolerate. And I don't even want to use the word tolerate, but instead I would say you get shocked what you can admire and learn from the other person. And so you would be surprised. And for our journey, that was the story. Nothing changed except that I changed my mindset. You know, the saying that when you change the way you see things, what you look at changes. That's basically what happened to me. It was exactly the same marriage. In fact, the same people. It's not like I transformed to become this super fantastic human being and he became this, you know, absolutely amazing human being. And then the marriage became, if I wish that was the story. That was not the story. The story was that we got back together and within the first 3 months, one of my biggest issues in the marriage, it happened again. But then we got a chance to finally deal with that issue once and for all and figure out how to deal with it properly. And that was the opening up for us of, wow, how to actually resolve issues and put our strengths together. One that cannot move, one that cannot stop. And then mix what we could together. So it's of course, we come with baggages, red flags, whatever we come with. But honestly, anybody that has been through so much, they actually end up becoming better partners. Because when you go through that much, you learn about yourself, you know, and you learn who you are and how you behave. And through that, you bring on board something, you know, that otherwise someone else would just show up and then all their issues will still come up anyway. And they have no clue about it themselves and they will just blame the other person. But if I know myself and something shows up, I'll say, yeah, I know that I can be like this. I'm working through this, you know, and I can be vulnerable and ask you to help me to work through it rather than say, oh, it's about you. So I don't think it's necessarily about what I can tolerate much more than what I choose to appreciate and open myself up to.
I love that reframing. If you were, well, can't really summarize all this. It's all been so rich and so interesting and fascinating. But, you know, if you're one of our listeners and you're thinking like, I'm want to save my relationship, what kind of, where do they start? Like, what kind of advice would you give them?
Yes. And if you've seen the red thread through, I always say it's about you. If you want to save your relationship, I will say, you know, just wait with that relationship first. Let's talk about you. Let's understand what's going on with you, and appreciate who you are and your journey and what you actually want to achieve. Once you are in that right place, it's, you know, I say this statement all the time, a relationship is as healthy as the two people that are in it. So I am so confident that if I am in my healthy state, the relationship will naturally, you know, be 50% healthy. As a minimum. And then, I mean, and nobody is ever 0%. So your partner is at least also 20%, and getting to it 70% of a good place in a relationship is absolutely, you know, is good, close to marital bliss. So that'll be the first thing that, you know, let's work on you. Let's focus on you. Leave the other person and what they are doing and not doing. Let's focus on you and where we can get you to a great place where you feel good about yourself and you feel, you know, absolutely amazing and love yourself. When we get there, we have done half of the way. And then we can address, you know, why are you not happy? What is going on? So I would say you don't need therapy. You don't necessarily need to go and see a coach. If you want to, there are amazing people out there. But if you have strength to do one thing, work on yourself.
Oh, that's excellent. Well, we've been so delighted to have you on here and talking about all of this. And so, I mean, I'm sure that our listeners are going to be tuning in and thinking, where can I learn more about Claire? Where can I learn more about, you know, like any more of your thoughts or like your services or programs or anything else, you know, where can they find you? What kinds of things are on the horizon for you next?
So I have a website called ClaireEfuayonsen.com. Or .coach. Yeah, it's the same. And there you can book a free transformation call with me. So it's about 5 minutes where we can explore together if, you know, we can work together. And even if we are not going to work together, in those 45 minutes, we will talk about some of your issues and I'll give you some highlights of things you can do to help yourself. So that's one thing. I have a free ebook on my website. You can download it and it gives 5 simple things you can do here and now. And then I have this popular marriage test that I have on my side. It's also good for relationships. You know, you don't need to be married, which actually gives you a snapshot of where your marriage or your relationship is and what is the urgent thing that you should do depending on where you are. So there are a few resources out there that are all free that you can actually download. I do free webinars. I do live sessions on my social media as well. So when you go on my website, you would get more information about stuff like that.
And can you take clients from around the world or can you have clients in the US and stuff?
Yes. Most of my sessions are actually done online and I actually do have a lot of American clients and Canada as well, and even Australia have clients. And it's also fine if you can locate me physically, but most of my sessions are online. Yeah. You can book me.
Well, fantastic. Awesome. Well, thank you, Claire. It has been a pleasure talking with you. I have learned so much. I need to go. Tracy and I are going to go hiking in a little bit. So we're going to process our own stuff through the lens of everything that you provided us today. I always say that we do this podcast, you know, if the listeners get something out of it, great, but it's mostly, you know, Tracy and I just can kind of process and put, you know, this stuff together. It's just fascinating to me. So thank you for both sharing your insight, but also sharing your personal experience. I mean, that means a lot to us. And I know it means a lot to our listeners. So thank you again. And for all of our listeners out there, until our next episode, go out there and rock those relationships. If you liked what you heard, check out our show notes for resources from today's episode. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram under Rock That Relationship and go to our website at rockthatrelationship.com for updated episodes and more great information.
Thanks for listening. Now go rock those relationships.